accession number 20590, Reel 5.
Norman Mitchell, Reel 5. So, after Lille, you proceeded towards Belgium.
We moved into Belgium, yes. That was, it would have been in...
when would that have been? Right about September, I think.
Can you remember any of the towns or villages you went through?
Well, my most vivid memory going there is going down to the Menin Gate, where all the British people from the First World War were buried. And I think I got an idea. We were the first people that evening to hear the last post sounded by the local fire brigade, yeah. The first time it had been done since the war was on. Because they couldn't do it with the Germans there, you know. And I remember that. And I remember my father was there, in actual fact, in that particular area. And I mean, there's a grave there with over 200,000 people in it, and we took it without firing a shot. Now that, to me, it was something. But I couldn't write and tell Father because you weren't allowed to say where you were, what you were doing. But we had a chat about it afterwards when I came home. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
What did you see of the Germans there?
I didn't see any. No, there were none of them there. They're gone. They're gone. There was no fighting. Mm. But you see, that's a strange thing about engaging in combat with armoured cars. You don't see a lot. Unlike infantry, where you're, and close to. From an armoured car, you don't see a lot. You don't see a lot of the damage you cause, which is, you know. So the man-to-man contact is absolutely minimal.
Right. Mm. Can you remember any engagements you had in Belgium?
Well, the regiment had a bit of a sticky time in a little place called Moorseal. Mm. It's well recorded. We were there, but
I'd like
we
to stick to what you can remember.
Yeah, we weren't in the front. We were going through territory. What they call travelling in amber. With the colours, when the regiment's on the move, there are three colours: red, amber, and green. Red, you know there's enemy. Amber, there may be. Green. No. Although that's not always sure. It's only the reports you get. And we were travelling in amber there, and the leading squadron went into this village of Moorseal and literally got quite surprised. We were told it was clear, but it wasn't. So they had a hell of a battle there around the school. Two assault troops from A and B squadron. We were a bit farther back protecting RHQ, and we were then seeing how the situation we were in. We then scattered round the various villages to come in from the side, and the threat from the side, I think, made the Germans pull out. And then the following day, we were in the lead, and all the Germans we were fighting that day, we took them all prisoner. They were all youth, Hitler youth,
really?
15, 16 year olds, yeah, lad, young school lads.
Yeah.
Sad.
So, where did you capture them?
That was in this village of Moorseal in Belgium, yeah.
Right. And then you went on to.
Went on then. Shortly after that, we go into Holland. First trips into southern Holland. That was going into September. That was round about the time of Arnhem.
Right. Did you see anything of the Arnhem?
Oh, we saw the aircraft going over, yeah.
And did you know what was happening?
Yeah, we knew. We'd have been the out group, and we'd been told exactly what was happening.
And of course, you got news, I suppose.
And we got news of what was going on. We were awfully sceptical about it.
Why was that?
Well, why it wasn't obvious to higher command, I don't know. But you and I and everybody else knows that Holland is flat. And to get an armoured column smashing its way up through Holland is almost an impossibility. Because first thing is the roads are up here and the land is down there. And to us, the first thing the Germans are going to do, they'll flood it. And that's what they did. And that, frankly, was the basic reason why the Guards Armoured Division couldn't get through up to Arnhem.
So where were you at that time?
We were fighting round the southwest of Eindhoven in villages, Bladel, fairly biggest town, Natersel, Hoogerloon, Happert, Eersel. These are our, they, we were in a semi-holding role and patrolling out each day to find out where, in actual fact, the weak link in the line was. And the 53rd record, we in actual fact were at this day in, day out, because the line had come to a bit of a halt there. And many troop actions out there were legion. One village there of Hoogerloon, a fabulous attack by old Davidor Goldsmith. Two troops, there was a carrier troop. They went straight on the road. We had one armoured car in the middle of the road going down, firing left and right, and the guys in the hedges, along with their Bren guns, with old Mike Addison, who was another lieutenant in charge of, I think it was six, either four or six, I can't remember which. And we literally captured the village. And
then you were there?
Oh, yeah, right in the middle of this lot, yeah. And then they also put in his other... this was the main attack, but he then put a feint in a bit farther over, coming in from the other side, and I think we must have taken about 200 prisoners or something. There were German casualties, were about 60, and I think we lost... I don't think we lost anybody.
So what exactly were you?
I was the leading armoured car coming in. Yeah. The unfortunate thing, just before we got onto the outskirts, we were going into the middle of the village, the clutch rod broke on the armoured car that I was in. And so we had to pull off the road, and the heavy car behind, not the command car, but the one behind, had to come in and take over from us and finish off into the middle of the village. Yeah. So they did break down occasionally. Yeah.
Did you always have the same one? Or?
Yes. Well, initially we in the Humber, armoured car, which was a manual, but with a 37mm gun, main gun, and a 7.92 Beza machine gun, coaxially, you know, in the turret. Yeah, turret was man handled. It wasn't electric.
Right. Uh-huh. What was it like inside? I
mean, pretty crowded. Yeah. You moved the turret, see, with the handle, you see. And there wasn't a lot of room. I mean, the driver, you had to put the turret in a certain position for him to slide in. And if you were facing forward with the turret, the gun, he couldn't get out. So you'd have to move it around, let him out. And then, of course, we'd always go in either in through the door at the side or in through the top, just depending on where we were, you know.
So you three had to work as quite a team then?
Oh, yeah.
Coordinated.
Coordinated, that's right, yeah.
So you had to turn the turret around.
Oh, that was my job, was turret fire, and, yeah, under orders from the commander, old Jerry Pritchard, my sergeant, yeah. Mm. Good guy he was.
Yeah. What was good about those armoured cars?
Not a lot. Not a lot.
Yeah.
They were, they would stop small arms fire, but nothing else. So they're vulnerable to anti-tank, even the smaller anti-tank guns that come right through them. And the old bazooka that the Germans used to use, that little thing on the end of a drain pipe as it were through there, that would hit the side, come straight through, and that was it, yeah.
So
the only defence, the main defence you had was speed. You could move.
How fast?
Oh, I think, well, the maximum speed of those, the old Humber, I suppose, was about 55 miles an hour flat out. But it had a 27 horsepower Humber engine in it. Roots engine, yeah, side valve.
So you were the fastest thing on the battlefield, really?
At that stage, yes. Well, a fighting vehicle, yeah. But the light armoured car, see, the light would go a lot faster, because that was only had that had three men in it, but the turret was... you used your feet and swiveled round, and you only had a Bren gun in the turret of that. But that would nip. Oh, you could do 60 or 70 in that, because it had the same size engine, but wasn't as heavy as the other one.
Yeah. Can you remember the first action you were engaged in the armoured car where you know you killed someone?
You just don't. This is the you know, we ask that a lot, and you don't in actual fact see. You're too far away. Mm. I mean, you look at that site, the battle site, what they call the battle site, is set at 400 yards. You pick out some of these 400 yards. You then put a cotton across the mouth of the gun. They're grooves, you see, top model without a cross, and you aim sight that at something which you estimate is 400 yards away. You then adjust the telescope. Now that 400 yard is called your battle sight. That will hit anything from 200 to 1,000 yards, because the trajectory, the actual projectile trajectory, is flat. There's no, like the artillery, up and down. It's literally the muzzle velocity is quite swift. Yeah. So you don't see it, and the machine gun's the same. It's run on the same basis, but you don't see a lot of what you hit or anything. You're building, yeah. If you're knocking the firing through a window or something, that's fine. Well, of course you see that go, but I mean, as to seeing anybody you shoot down, well, you may see them fall down, but it's such a distance as a rule, because you don't let them get that close, because if they got a bazooka, you'll lose.
Yeah. Yeah. So, any other places in Belgium?
Not. That said, there are one or two bits of crossing canals and things like that, you know, but it's mainly the main action that I was involved with a lot in. It was in Holland. That was in the just south west of Eindhoven. And then latterly, when Arnhem had failed, we were then pushed up the 53rd Reconnaissance Regiment, the regiment as such, was pushed in over the Nijmegen Bridge, because there was a land between Arnhem and Nijmegen, which was very wet flooded. We used to call it the island. That was, everybody called it the island. And who should be there holding that place for the time being was the American 101st Airborne Division, the Screaming Eagles. And we were sent up there as armour to thicken them up on the ground. It's one of those expressions you use, to thicken them up. They had no armour, and we went up and were attached to them for, I suppose, a good 4 or 5 days, whilst they could, because they'd taken Nijmegen, whereas the 1st Airborne had gone farther. I think the 82nd Airborne Division had taken Eindhoven. Then they had, it was this semi-zone. But the most spectacular bridge in that area, apart, I know Arnhem was the one at a place called Grave, which I believe the Polish Airborne took. Right. That was a spectacular bridge, that was.
So working with the
Americans, yeah,
Eagles, yeah. What was that?
Fabulous,
like?
Fabulous. Different. Food? Good Lord, we'd never been so well off in all our lives.
Yeah.
Fresh bread was shipped up. All the tinned chicken, tinned turkey. What did we get? Oh, McConaughey's soup, which tore it out of the tin like water.
So,
well, it's other things, yeah, as well.
But. Did they share their food with you?
Well, we were attached to them, we draw their rations. And we were sorry to leave them. Especially as they came back to England. Which we didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how did you get on with them? I mean, you were working with them.
Wonderful.
Quite closely.
Absolutely. Yeah. They'd chop their left arm off for you. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Was there ways of doing things?
Ways of doing things totally different. Totally different to us, yeah. They operate
in
with.
What ways?
Their attitude was so different, and they weren't as safety conscious. No, nowhere near as safety conscious as we were.
What about their tactics?
Well, you couldn't say a lot about that, because it was a holding, yeah. It was a holding role. That was what was holding role.
Yeah.
So you were stopping waiting to see the Germans crossing the river, if they were going to come over. Mm. If they didn't, that was when we first saw the first German jet fighter, the ME-282, I think it was, yeah. Come down bombing Nijmegen Bridge.
Right.
There's.
You've seen the
Nijmegen.
Yes, yeah.
You've seen the bridge at Nijmegen. What, now? Lately, or?
No, in the book.
As it was. Mm. Well, it's in a bit like that now.
No.
The cantilever's gone, yeah. And it's about a 6-lane highway through there. You know? Yeah. But, of course, the middle section of that was blown. Mm. And so it went in so far. Then you had a Bailey Bridge. Mm. Not Bailey Bridges, do you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bailey Bridge up. Across and down, and you used to get that horrible feeling when you got over that Bailey Bridge. You went, "Now, we're on our own now. Hope you don't blow it up behind us," you know. Which was, they were putting these chaps up on one-man submarines up through there. Mm. So they had Monty's Moonlight there then. Mm. So you had the searchlights on right the way down the river, so that you could see what was happening.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So how long were you with the Americans for?
Only about a week. Mm-hmm. Only about a week, until they got things up together, and we could get another division up to. Take over their positions. Then, of course, they went back home. Mm. Well, came back to Greenham.
Yeah.
as strange as it might seem.
Did you get an impression of what their training was like?
Wonderful. Marvellous. They're airborne. They're airborne people, and I understand the Marines were the same, but you can't say the same about the average American division. The average American infantry division was very well equipped, but not very well trained. No.
So, but the Americans you were with were who?
101st. 101st, yeah, the Screaming Eagles, as they call themselves, yeah. Because they, in actual fact, were based here. I mean, that's before we came here, obviously. Mm. And they left here, and there are pictures around of Eisenhower here seeing them off.
Yeah, that's yeah. Right. Newbury, yeah.
Yeah.
So, after your time with the Screaming
Eagles. With the Screaming Eagles, we then came back down with a holding role then along the Meuse, the River Meuse, and that's prior to the attack on. For us, on the Reichswald Forest. That was east of Nijmegen. We were based at Grosbeek, and the attack went through into the Reichswald Forest. That must have been... Oh, Lord.
Into the winter.
Into the winter, and it was wicked. It was one of those diabolical places you could have. After all the dry weather we'd had, it was flooded. Of course, they'd opened the dikes. Germans don't flood the whole lot. Armoured cars, we couldn't do a thing. All we did was, whilst that initial attack went in, all we could do was traffic control.
Because you couldn't get through.
Well, I couldn't get in. No, we couldn't get out. I mean, even the Bren gun carriers couldn't get in. The only thing that could move were this American Weasel. They had an American Weasel which had, I think, it had rubber tracks on it, and therefore they would, in actual fact, cope with the mud and bounce out better. But then, of course, as always, they were a long time coming, and they were used in the main then for taking up. Ammunition and bring casualties back. Mm.
So you were based before you went into the Reichswald.
At Grosbeek.
Right. Which what is was it east like there? I mean,
well, we were at a school. We in actual fact took. There was a school, and so we made our troop headquarters there. But the
quite
point.
Comfortable.
Oh, quite comfortable. Yeah, well, you weren't sleeping under the stars like you did a lot, but. The main thing, the most amusing thing that happened there was that whilst we were there, they had a little detachment of military police came and joined us as well. But the night before the attack went in on the Reichswald, there was a battalion of Scottish infantry there. I don't know what, they weren't our division. I don't know what division they were with. And our officer, old Frank Long, we had a chat about it. Well, there was a post outside our place. Well, their attack was going in the morning. And we said, well, look, you know, we can't do anything here with the army cars. Bring our guys out for a rest, and we'll take over this frontline position. And we'll get the military police to help us out.
That was
amusing. And the sergeant of the police said, what? My men, they haven't fired a rifle before. Now here could be the chance for us to learn. So, he wasn't doing this, and my officer said, look, I'm in charge here, you'll do as you're told, and that was it, yeah. And so what we did, we took over the trenches of the night, one of us, we were one of them, which was a very good education for him.
Yeah. So where did those military police come from?
They were Corps headquarters, right. 30 Corps headquarters, yeah, General Horace, his mob.
And who was your officer then?
Frank Long, yeah. Lieutenant Frank Long, wonderful guy, come from Bristol, same as myself, so he must have been... Pretty good Bristolian, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
right. So.
Then once, once the Reichswald was clear, we then went on through to the into the area of Goch. Where are the other towns? Cavalier, Wies. I remember these towns because and it was there that A squadron, not C squadron, A squadron, an actual, because we were coming from the north, the American 9th Army was coming up from the south over the Roar River, and they met up, joined up there, and there's a photograph, which in actual fact made American Time magazine in 1994, the 50th anniversary, it made that, yeah, my son lives in Seattle,
yeah.
And he sent this back to me, he said, look, they recognised that you were there. Yeah.
So what do you remember about, of your experience of it?
Well, it was in the main, it was all minefields, big craters that they'd blown to stop you going on through, and then machine gun posts at various places. I mean, they were quite easy. They were usually, well, those with the armored cars were quite easy to deal with. I think we still needed people on the ground to go in and do the final bits and pieces, you know.
So what action did you actually see then? What were you doing?
Oh, well, I was a gunner in the armored car.
Yeah. And you were just...
Oh, yeah, we were scrambling, firing away and one thing another, yeah, and then coming back. And then, of course, at the end of the day, you had to come back, clean out the guns, take the barrel off the machine gun and clean the big... boil him out. Mm-hmm. Boil him out with hot water and oil. Then oil them after.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you at the end of the day then to set your...
It was a good hour to an hour and a half.
What else would you do apart from cleaning the guns?
Well, you then you check the... I mean, you do all the engine checks, you know. You wait for the supplies to come up, petrol, oil, and so on and so forth. And then when you'd done all that and got the car ready the following day, then you had some. Then you prepared something to eat. Because... Mm. That was first.
Yeah. It's a cavalry way.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, and you know, it's strange, even one of the years when I did a certain amount of private hire work, that was the last thing when I come in. I always fill with petrol and then come home. No, it was a habit you get into.
Yeah. Were you always ready to go then, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Straight in, bang, and away, yeah. Essential.
Yeah. So what else did you see in the Bad Reichenwald? I mean, there were lots of...
Oh, there was lots of bug tanks and one thing and another, and even the recovery, the Scammel recovery lorries got stuck in some of it. It was so deep. Mm. The weather was bad. Mm. And, of course, all the streams of that had been, and the dikes had been opened up and flooded.
Mm. So then you went through the forest?
Through the forest in, and then we were then in command of all that, right up to the Rhine. Mm. And they were stopped there then, prior to the build-up for the Rhine crossing. I was crossing the Rhine on my 21st birthday, the 23rd of March. Should never forget that one. Yeah. No, nothing to it. I went across the bridge.
Yeah.
Because the airborne went in, 6th airborne went in, landed at Hamel and Kelm, and we were across the river in next to no time. The engineers stuck this bridge across it towards Zanton, I believe it was called, Zanton. And we nipped across there, relieved the airborne. And for a while we had billets at night. Gliders that landed.
Really?
Yeah.
But you slept in?
Oh, yeah. So too right, yeah.
They were the right size, were they?
I didn't even get umpteen of us in there to sleep, you know. And you were out the rain.
Yeah.
It's another point.
Mm. Mm. And how long were you there?
Well, then, I mean, we started then the... prior to that... was the Ardennes thing, which came at Christmas. Because we didn't go into the Reichswald until... That was after Christmas, wasn't it, I think?
Never mind, anyway.
The Ardennes...
We're not too worried about the order, because...
No, the Ardennes...
We know from the books when you're...
Christmas in the Ardennes, that was right.
Right, okay. So, where did you sort of enter the Ardennes?
Well, we moved back into Belgium. We come out the line and moved back into Belgium... to a place called Herentals, I think it's called, yeah. Mm. Herentals, yeah. And we then went back out of the line for a rest, and we were billeted then in a village called Nievenrode, which is a suburb of Brussels, and we were there for about a week, rest and refit, yeah.
So what did you see of Brussels then?
Brussels life, you know. The mannequin, obviously, which you know about. Yes, we ran, and there were film shows and shopping expeditions and that if you wanted them, and that was it. We had I think we were there about a week because we were stationed our particular troop. We were stationed in a cafe. We had beds for the first time, and. We were very well looked after. Yeah, the wife ran the cafe. Her husband was the manager of the local dairy, the multiple dairy, you know, yeah.
So you were well fed?
We were well fed. Still our own rations, nothing extra, no.
What did you see of the situation of civilians in Brussels? They've been occupied a long time.
It's amazing what it was about. You could buy whiskey like that.
Really?
White Horse whiskey was actually flowed like water. And that was immediately after liberation.
Right.
So where they got it from? I mean, the officer's mess couldn't get it. The officer's mess had a supply, but they didn't get it, not so I understand, not in quite the same quantity. Mm. But we could buy scotch in the... with no bother at all. Yeah. Couldn't get any... Well, you got the beer, but it was local stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Which wasn't all that exciting.
So you were there for a week, and then...
And then we went back up then to train at a place called Turnhout. And we were there to train for using explosive charges, because the next thing would have been the Siegfried Line prior to going in, you know, and we're learning how to use these and set them to blow these Jagger-Dangers teeth up. And the armoured cars were all down and stripped and cleaned and everything else, and we were at, 48 hours notice to move, which was liberal. On those sort of things, you get that 48 hours, then it comes down to 24, then 12, and then depending on the situation, how quick it does. So we were there on 48 hours notice, and all of a sudden we got a two hour notice to move. Way! Excitement.
Yeah.
And then
and we
moved down to Namur. We obviously, being armoured cars, we could travel independently, and so we our armoured car, my troop, the three troop with old Frank Long, we were first in Namur, and we were absolutely amazed to see the chaos there. The Americans going out, coming out. Get out! Jerry's here. What the hell's going on?
You met them coming out.
They were all Americans running like mad. Yeah.
And which American?
Oh, I don't know which American it was. I have no idea what unit it was. Yeah. Didn't even.
So they tried to take it and bring it back.
Well, no. They'd heard of what was happening farther on, and then of course Montgomery then took over the northern sector of the Ardennes. I think he took over the American First Army and the Ninth. I think it was the Ninth or the Seventh. I'm not sure which. He took over that and incorporated the 21st Army Group, which was the Brits and the Canadians. To stop the gap. We abandoned our plans for a Christmas dinner in a hurry, and so we then in Namur. We secured the bridge, the main bridge, and then of course darkness fell, and of course you can't do anything then. And then in the meantime, by the early hours, the infantry had arrived because they were bust bring up. And then of course, having get the infantry in command of all the bridges, it's a recce job. Go and find them. And we went out then to find the first contact was made about 15 miles away. So the Americans were panicking for no reason at all. Well.
How did you make contact with them? Oh,
well, they fired at us. Dear. That's the usual. That's the usual way of finding out, yeah.
So you were 15 miles beyond.
15 miles beyond Namur before we made first contact with them. Yeah, they may have been nearer elsewhere. But on the particular axis of advance that we were wrecking, I mean, that was we went about 15 miles before we met them. Yeah. They did come far. They did come near then, because Montgomery's idea was to withdraw and make. Montgomery always operated with a tidy battlefield. Of this, his history. That was the battlefield had to be tidy, and he had to persuade the Americans to withdraw. Much of their discussion, they didn't want to come back. No. But he said, "No, you've got to have a tidy battle, otherwise you won't fight it properly." And then, of course, we advanced all the way through there up into the cold. Of winter, and eventually ended up. I think we would have made contact with the Americans if we hadn't been pulled back, because we'd been in right from the beginning, and then the 51st Highland Division took over for us. But then that was the end of the camp, end of the Ardennes.
Norman Mitchell, end of reel 5.
Man.